This is the happy, I'm sorry, it is not the happy house hunters. It's the ins and outs of opening a bed. I've got too many groups on my mind. This is the ins and outs of opening a bed and breakfast and how you can monetize your own bed and breakfast, Airbnb, guest house, VRBO, all of that is actually described as a short-term rental. So we're going to talk about short-term rentals. And we have Joe Peterson with us today. We also have Adam Messmer. Adam is my co-host, my co-moderator. And so he'll have some questions. He also has an Airbnb. I also have an actual guest house in my home. So mine's a little different than some of you. I have three rooms in the house that I live in that I actually use as a guest house. And we do have guests coming later this evening. So anyway, so I am excited. And so we're going to be talking to Joe. So anyway, say hi, Joe, and tell us where you are coming to us from. Where are you located, Joe?
Yeah. First off, thanks for letting me join this monthly meetup. Definitely an honor to be able to join you guys. I'm in Columbus, Ohio as well. And I was able to meet Adam and Kathy a few months ago at some investor meetups in town.
Okay, perfect. Yes, I've actually talked with you in person a few times, and we do kind of get to rub elbows a little bit. So I appreciate that. As we get started, Adam, jump in and tell them a little bit about who you are, where you're coming to us from, and what it is that you do in addition to that Airbnb that you have.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathy. And I'm excited to see Joe, by the way. Like, good to see you, man. Like, thanks for joining us. I just saw the email the other day that you were going to be the guest, and I was pretty jazzed because I haven't seen you in a little while. It's been
Happy New Year, man.
Good to see you.
Me too.
So I work in lending. I'm a lender, and I specialize in lending for real estate investors. So I do conventional DSCR and hard money loans. In Ohio and in like 35 other states, I broker like 15 different lenders. So I have tons and tons of different options. You know, I come from the world of banking, and in banking, while I loved it and I'm glad that it gave me a career, the universe is this big, and in the brokerage world, the universe is just, and it is universe size. So, I absolutely love it. Before I say anything else, though, I do have to tell you that my NMLS number is 980119. I always have to check. I don't remember it, and I don't know why, but 980119. And I'm a mortgage loan officer for Motto Mortgage here in Columbus, Ohio.
Perfect. 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 Lynn just gave us a message that she said hopefully she can join us in the panel in the future, because she owns and operates also at the moment. And so if anyone else has an Airbnb and you'd like to share, just drop it in the chat that you'd like to also share at a future meetup, and put your email address in there so that I can get in touch with you. So I would be I'd be happy to connect. Joe, I want to circle back to you and ask you, put on your memory bank, go back in time. What is your background before you ever got started with an Airbnb? What brought you up to that first thought that you might want to have an Airbnb?
Sure. Yeah. That's a great question. So prior to moving to Columbus, I actually lived in Des Moines, Iowa for a little over 36 years. And I graduated from Iowa State University, got a biology degree, a math minor, and then eventually got a job in insurance. And so I've worked for Nationwide Insurance for the last 12 years. And a majority of that time has been in the commercial lines actuarial department. And been married the last 11 years, a little over 11 years. Through my wife's job, she had an opportunity to relocate out to Columbus, Ohio. And so we jumped on that opportunity. And so the last 2 years we've been here, and that's kind of what brought us to Columbus, at least. Real estate wise, I mean, we were fortunate that we had a little bit of equity through selling our home in Des Moines, Iowa. And we're like, well, we need to do something with this. Can't just let it sit in a checking account or whatever. So we quickly decided we wanted to get into real estate. And quite frankly, we didn't know where to start. We weren't really sure what to do. But you know, we kind of looked into potentially long-term rental, short-term rental, maybe try a flip. And through that, yeah, go ahead.
Well, what made you think you wanted to do real estate? What was it about? Because that wasn't your background. So what made you even think that real estate was going to be the answer for you?
Yeah, I think that just kind of just general, you know, just general things that we've heard where it's like, oh, real estate's a great opportunity for a lot of different things, for investment, for retirement, for passive income, honestly, was probably the main one where it's like, you know, we have our corporate job, which is nice, and you have the benefits and you have all that, but
I love that W-2 income. It's easy to rent, it's easy to lend on.
That's right. The passive income side, honestly, was something that was very attractive to us. And so we kind of knocked out the idea of doing a flip, some of it just because, you know, prior to owning an Airbnb, I had never even painted a wall, to be honest with you. So it's like, okay, I don't think we should dive in that far. But we had stayed at a lot of Airbnbs and done a lot of research, and really the passive income is something that attracted us to it.
Okay. Okay. So now you've decided you wanted to get into real estate. And now as you ended up moving to Columbus, tell us how you ended up in Columbus and then how you started to look for your first property.
Sure. So yeah, my wife's job, it was an opportunity to relocate to Columbus. And we had heard that Columbus is really just a big Des Moines. And we actually agree, a lot of great people, a good Midwest town and everything. But what we ended up doing is, and this is the last 2 years. So this is right in the middle of the pandemic. And wow. So, yeah, definitely an interesting time.
Well, I have to ask you real quick, what came first? Did you decide that you wanted an Airbnb and then started looking for a property? Or did you decide to look for real estate? And then once you found it, said, this might make a great Airbnb. Which came first?
Yeah, so I would say that we knew we wanted to do real estate. And then what we did, just kind of to get familiar with the city, really, is we were driving around to different neighborhoods. We went to a few open houses. And just kind of by chance, honestly, we ran into one agent that had a few Airbnbs in Columbus. And so we just kind of exchanged information, stayed in contact over the first 12 months or so. And then, and just kind of during that time, we narrowed it down to, we want to do Airbnb. This is something that, you know, we've stayed at a lot of Airbnbs throughout in Europe and the United States. Mm-hmm. And we really thought we could add some value to guess.
Well, and from what I understand, the Airbnb market is a lot larger even in other countries than what it is here in the United States. Especially right now in Africa, I have a lot of students in my mastermind that are in that whole Africa region because they don't have the hotels that we have here in some of their smaller little towns and villages. And so Airbnb is huge over there. And so a lot of folks are looking how they can monetize on some of that because they see that that's a great way to have some actual income coming into the household by having an Airbnb. So I get that. So now you've met this realtor, you're kind of hanging out and you're looking at properties. And so now you think you found one and you had in mind from the very beginning that this was going to be an Airbnb once you purchased your first property here.
Yeah. What we ended up doing, I guess what I would recommend is really trying to do your market research. You know, quite frankly, not every property is going to be a great Airbnb. Maybe it would do better as a long-term rental or something else, but, so do your due diligence and, through your own research and, or meeting people through webinars, through local meetups, talk to investors, things like that, and really try to do your due diligence so that you're not just kind of crossing your fingers and hoping that it turns out to work out or not. So
Joe, I have a question. So let's say, hey, I'm brand new and I want to go start a short-term rental. And I'm looking at, I'm on realtor.com and I'm looking at stuff. What am I looking for? And then second question, follow-up question is, how do I know how much I'm going to make?
Yeah, definitely good questions. There's a lot of resources out there, free and paid, that you can go to online. AirDNA is one that's very common. What we also did, honestly, was we even looked at just other Airbnbs that are active on the Airbnb app. So we looked at comps and just kind of looked at AirDNA, other comps in certain neighborhoods that we're searching in, and just kind of trying to gather information through those free resources, as well as paid resources, and then also talk to our realtor. Since that person actually had one in the exact same neighborhood as us and was a comp, that kind of made it a lot easier to have a little bit better idea on how it would perform.
Well, and that brings me to my next question. Did you have to do any research with zoning? Now, again, you're working with this realtor and they had one mm-hmm. already in the neighborhood, so they've probably already done the zoning homework. Right. What did you have to know before you, because buying a piece of real estate is kind of a big expenditure. It's kind of a big deal and you don't want to get it wrong. And so what homework did you have to do to make sure that you could actually have an Airbnb or any type of a short-term rental in that particular neighborhood or that particular location?
Right. I think that we were fortunate because a lot of the homework had been done for us, but I definitely agree with the, you need to do your due diligence. You need to look at city websites. Even in Columbus, Ohio, they have different neighborhoods where, you know, in one village, one neighborhood, maybe it's allowed, in another one it's not, or just even more or less restrictions. The actual property that we ended up purchasing, and I'm actually in it right now, it was an Airbnb before. And so just kind of through our own research, through city websites, as well as just already knowing that it was an Airbnb and talking to our realtor, we had done our homework up front before buying the property.
Did you mention that it was an Airbnb beforehand? Did your seller share like figures with you about how much they made, like a pro forma?
I think that actually would have been a good idea. We honestly didn't even think of that at the time. We knew that talking to the seller's agent that it probably wasn't performing up to what she was hoping for, but we saw when we walked in and we looked at it and we saw the location and everything, we knew that we could, or we were pretty confident that we could go in there, make some updates and make it look a lot better. She was kind of running it more where let's get more heads in beds. Let's just kind of do the bare minimum. That's our opinion at least. And we thought, hey, we're going to just kind of make it a lot nicer, put some king size beds in there, decorate it better, paint, do a lot of things to make it look a lot nicer, provide a lot more amenities, things like that.
So there was a big value add there, it sounds like.
That was definitely our strategy. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. So since you really don't know what her profit margin was on the property, am I correct that you really don't have a way to compare with whether you're doing a lot better than she was or not? You really, do you know that at any level?
I don't. Yeah. That agent, you know, obviously he's representing the seller and he wanted to get the house sold. Right. So he's like, it's performing well. It's like, well, what's yep. well, but even through those same conversations, it's like, well, it can't be going that well, I don't think, just kind of based off of some of the other information we had gathered. But yeah, we don't know exactly how it's performing. Even when we looked at AirDNA and some other comps, those types of numbers were able to give us a little bit more comfort in, taking the leap and buying the property.
Wow, that's still a big expenditure, and it's a big leap to finally, you know, buy that property. Did you ever think in the back of your mind that what happens if we decide we don't want to do this, or you know, and now we own this property? Did you have a plan B or an exit strategy before you got involved in short-term rental?
We did because we, that's also, yeah, you basically hit on another point that I was going to bring up is that I think that, you know, and you don't always have to do this, but I think in a perfect world, I think that, if you can buy a property that can both perform long-term rental and short-term rental and the numbers make sense, that would probably be most ideal. But I do agree. I think having some sort of exit strategy is always a great idea before you buy the property.
Now, what kind of numbers did you want to have before actually signing on the dotted line? When you say you did your due diligence and you looked at your numbers and what kind of a profit margin did you want to have before you bought? Is there a good or a bad? And again, for me, I'm asking this question, honestly, because my guest house is in my home. So I have my mortgage, whether I have a guest house or not. Mm-hmm. And if I stop doing it, my mortgage stays the same. My insurance, for the most part, stays the same. I had to add a little extra rider, you know, to have, yep, you know, the short-term rental guest in, but it's not very expensive. And so my expenses really don't change a whole lot, whether I do the short-term rental or not. And so for me, it's just, it's added benefit. It's added cash flow every time I have guests. So what was your, I guess, bottom line that you had to clear to make it worth your while?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely wanted all expenses taken care of. So mortgage, insurance, utilities. We actually provide some freebies to our guests, snacks, coffee, maybe an extra toothbrush or something like that, just kind of in our, you know, maybe if they forgot something type of box. And so we're adding up all those expenses. And then we're wanting to save for maintenance or capital expenditures, all those expenses. Cleaner is one large expense.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of you know, if you're in the business, but adding all of that up, we still wanted to make sure that we hopefully cash flow at least a couple hundred dollars a month.
Okay. So once all of your expenses are covered, as long as you're in a positive cash flow of a couple hundred dollars a month, you were okay with that.
Yes.
And then from there, depending on how busy the season was or how often, you know, you could, you know, have guests in, that from there, your cash flow would just go up.
Right.
But you didn't want it to be any less. That was kind of your worst case scenario.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. Now, has it been performing in Columbus, Ohio to your expectations?
So I would say overall, yes. But there's definitely a seasonal aspect to it. Summer and fall, I think performed way beyond our expectations. But winter has been below our expectations. So I think that, just kind of, you know, keeping that in mind that I think just about every location has some sort of seasonality to it, is important. Hopefully don't get too low on in the low months and, you know, it can kind of be maybe a little bit scary or worrisome, but you know, average those lower months out with the better months, and long run throughout the year, hopefully you're hitting your financial goals.
Well, Lynn made a note when you were talking about, you know, your minimum. She went, "Oh no," she said, "we need to talk, dear."
Yeah, I think that that's fair.
Yeah. So my guess is, of course, I am just on the southeast side of Columbus. And so I am somewhat right at the northern edge of the whole Hocking Hills region. And of course, the Hocking Hills region in central Ohio draws a lot higher overnight rate than what it does in Columbus City at large. And probably also what I would get here in Canal Winchester is probably closer to what you're getting there in Columbus. But when we're in season, I make as much or more as the same as I do on a one bedroom apartment. I get out of each room and I have three rooms. And so it's like having three additional rentals. But yet I only have one furnace that I have to maintain and one roof I have to maintain. So my expenses are a lot less and my income is up. And again, it's kind of seasonal. But when Hocking Hills is in full swing, we actually get overflow from Hocking Hills up as far as Canal Winchester, because everything down there is booked. And so they do escalate their rates. And so when they're in season, they're really making some bucks. And we know some folks down there that have some of those short-term rentals, and they are bringing in some nice income. Mm-hmm. For those of you that may not know, Mark and I just bought a property in Hocking Hills. Ours needs a little bit of work. It came without a well, which we knew when we bought it. It has a water tank in the ground instead of a well, so we know we're going to be putting in a well. But our plan down the road is to actually, we'll have a short-term rental right in the heart of Hocking Hills. So we'll get to share in some of that as well. So with that, I want to circle over to Adam for a minute. Adam, tell us about your short-term rental there in Columbus, and what kind of numbers did you want to have when you got started? And then you're using an actual management company, which we want to talk to Joe about that as well. So Adam, over to you for a minute.
Yeah, sure. So let's see. So how did I get it, and what kind of numbers was I looking at? I was originally in the market for a long-term rental. And then it was so depressing because you give 20% and then you get like not much. I mean, you really, you get some equity and you get a couple hundred bucks a month, you know, if that. And so I really wanted to find something that could outperform that. And I had been talking to the property manager that I use, Ben Vail at Hospitality. I've been using him. I've known him since he started the business, and it was something that I always found fascinating. And so once we gave up the search for long-term rentals and kind of shifted to short-term rentals, then it was like, okay, well, if they really do make three times the monthly rent, which that's the allegation, that's why so many people are interested in it, then we could definitely afford something beyond just what we could afford for a long-term rental. So, so we stumbled upon a house, in an area of Columbus, just north of the University District, called the Old North. And, it's really what I consider kind of a utilitarian play on short-term rental. So I really think that there's like two plays that you can do. You can either go destination, where, okay, you're next to a lake or you're on a mountain or you're in the forest or something like that, where you're going to be there. And then there's the utilitarian play of, hey, I need to go here. I need to go to Columbus because of the Buckeyes or because of the Ohio State Fair, or because of the Quarter Horse Congress, or any number of different reasons. So I want to be centrally located so that I can get all around the city in an easy way. You know, that's a utilitarian play. And that's what we decided to do. So it's comfortable, but it's functional. And that's kind of that was our game plan. To answer numbers, we figured that we could not only meet our expenses, but make around $500 a month. And I want to say that was at like a 70% occupancy rate and an average nightly rate of like $136, maybe $160, something like that. I forget the original projection. And the reason that I forget is because we decided to launch this thing in February of 2020. So just in time to get hit in the face with COVID and ruin all of our plans. So what's the end to that? Well, 2020 actually wasn't that bad. When you take out depreciation, the only major loss that we had was the initial furnishings of the property, which was about $5,500. And so to me, that's breaking even. You know what I mean? So that's what we did in 2020. And 2021, I haven't gotten my taxes back from my accountant yet because I haven't given them.
I'm just now sending out 1099s. I get it.
I think we're going to do about, I know we cash flowed about $700 to $1,000, this year, and we rearranged some debt, because rates are going up and, you know, that's a plug, but, call me for refi. So we reorganized some debt. So there was less interest that was being paid each month on the loans that were used to procure the property. Speaking of procurement, well, let me ask you, Joe, what did you do? Did you do just a standard traditional 30-year conventional loan, or did you get some kind of special financing on that?
That is what we ended up doing, just 30-year conventional loan.
Okay. And Kathy, what did you do for yours in Hocking Hills? Because I know I didn't do it.
Well, I have to back up and say, at my home, where I also have my guest house, I have three rooms. Mine are pretty much 100% profit because, again, if I stop having guests, I live here. So, you know, the mortgage is the same whether I have guests or I don't have guests. The insurance is pretty much the same. The utilities are very similar. The guests might use a few more utilities, but not a lot. And so I don't really see a big change in my budget, whether I have guests or don't have guests. So I'm actually, and when we're in season and things are going well, which we've had a couple of pretty decent years, even with, you know, the pandemic, things really slowed down right there at first, you know, because people were kind of freaking out and they didn't want to travel. But once things loosened up again, we haven't really, other than just our normal seasonal stuff, we've been pretty busy all along. And so I'm cash flowing closely to about $1,500 a month per room. So I'm up there. I'm up there with Lynn.
Yeah. That's sweet.
But again, I'm not subtracting out mortgage. See, you guys are subtracting out those expenses because you have a standalone house, and mine is in my home. So I'm not subtracting out those expenses. And so that income goes on a Schedule C for me, running it as the Caraway guest house. And and I'm allowed, because of the guest house, I'm allowed to deduct some things off my Schedule C. But again, not a lot, because it's my home, because I'm also living here. So anyway, I want to jump over real quick. Lynn says, of course, I'll pick up where I left off, where she said she needs to talk to Joe about his cash flow. because her cash flow is a lot higher. And she said she's booked right now, but they never showed up. But of course, she's got her cancellation clause. And so they paid anyway. And she wants to speak to Adam about refinancing. So tap in there, Adam, put your information in the chat so folks can find you. Todd says he would like to find a manager for his Airbnb in Lancaster, if anyone knows of someone.
And Lancaster, Ohio?
Yeah. Are you Lancaster, Ohio, Todd, or a different Lancaster? Because we've got Lancasters all over the place. But anyway, I'm assuming Lancaster, Ohio. I'm going to put down Todd's name. Todd, if you want to connect with me, I'm always looking for folks that can share, you know, their experience with us on the calls. And so I would love to have you on the call since you have an Airbnb. And Adam, you've got a management company, and we're going to get back to Joe because Joe is getting ready to start a management company. And then there's one in Hocking Hills, and I don't have it right in front of me, but I can get that. Also, we have Pablo says, I would like to, he said he wants to talk to Adam as well. He's in the middle of purchasing a home and he wants to turn it into an Airbnb. And Lynn said she's got to go, but she's going to be in contact. So we're going to hang in there with Lynn. And Adam put his information in so we can reach him. And Todd says, yes, Lancaster, Ohio, 4 bedrooms, 2 baths on Main Street. So yes, perfect, perfect, perfect. So I want to circle back to Joe. Now, Joe, once you got here, tell us about the fact that you had a job or have a job with the W-2, you were able to purchase this particular property. But now share with us how your life is going now, and because you're getting ready to make some big changes. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I recently got my real estate license in Ohio, and I'm working for Keller Williams Consultants out in Dublin, Ohio. And then also I'm looking to start my property management business as well. For, I think I'll mainly focus on short-term rental, but it'll be a situation by situation. You know, just kind of depending on where the property is located and logistics and things like that. And then I don't think I've told you yet, I can't remember, but my last day at Nationwide was last Friday. So that big
change. Nice.
You've made the leap.
I made the leap.
You're deep in it, man. It's great.
Yep.
Real estate full time.
Love it. So,
so now you're a full-time real estate agent and you're getting ready to start your management company to manage short-term rentals. Now, how big of an area are you going to be working, or have you even determined that yet?
You know, my original thought is to mainly stay in that Columbus area. But again, I think it's going to really depend on logistics and each property's situation. You know, if it's within a 20-30 minute distance from my area, and I can make it happen with all the cleaners and things, coordinating laundry and cleaners, then it's something that I'm more than open to doing. But yeah, probably mostly in the Columbus area to start out.
I would think that if you're going to branch into some other communities like Lancaster or on down toward Hocking Hills, I would think mm-hmm. that you would have to have a cleaning crew located yep. more there. And that's always a big concern. Now, how I want to go around and ask, how does everybody get your bookings? And I'll kind of share first my bookings. I started off with Airbnb because it was in my home and I didn't know if we were going to like it, you know, having somebody actually in our house. And we have it set up very nicely because we have interior doors that have exterior locks on them. And so when our guests come into the guest quarters, they cannot come into our private area. And so they can only come into the guest area. And so once we had our first couple of guests and we decided that it was going to work out okay and that we did like it, then we decided that we wanted to advertise a little more because as many of you may or may not know, a lot of folks think, oh, I want to start an Airbnb. Well, you're actually starting a short-term rental. Airbnb is just an online booking site that you can use to get bookings for your short-term rental. So once you have a short-term rental and you're approved by your city, your zoning is fine, everything is good, you can actually put your short-term rental on other booking sites as well. Now, I started on Airbnb because it was an easy on and off the site. I could start with one room, and if I didn't like it, I could just pull the listing and no harm done. Because once you get on some of these other sites, you're signing some contracts. So you have to know that you're going to do it. And so Airbnb is the perfect site to get started. But once you know you're going to do it, then you can go on to booking.com. You can go on to Expedia. Expedia just bought a whole bunch of all the little online travel sites. Expedia bought hotels.com and Travelocity and all of those other ones. And so what happens is once I started going on more than one channel, one online booking channel, I started worrying about getting a double booking. What if somebody was booking my room on Airbnb at the same time somebody was booking that exact same room on booking.com or on Expedia? And how was I going to keep from having a double booking? And the answer to that is a channel manager. And a channel manager is just a software program, and there's hundreds of them out there. And I did research because, again, we're kind of small. I just have the three rooms so far in my home as a guest house. I did buy a condo right on the edge of Reynoldsburg, Whitehall, Columbus. It's kind of right there in the little trifecta area. And that one I can use as a short-term rental, but I have a long-term renter in there currently because she came with the purchase. So as long as she's there, I'm going to leave her there. But if she moves on, we'll turn that into a short-term rental. And then, of course, we just bought the property in Hocking Hills. And then once we get our well put in, we're going to actually use that as a short-term rental. So I will have a total of three locations once I'm finished. I'll have one in Columbus, one in Canal Winchester with the three rooms, and then the one in Hocking Hills. So I couldn't go on VRBO with my home because I rent the rooms individually, separately. And VRBO, their claim to fame is that they want the whole house. You know, it's a vacation rental where you get the whole property, the kitchen and the living room and all of that. And my kitchen, see, is closed off from my guest that's in my owner's suite. The guests just get a room. So it's just almost like a hotel room for my guests. So anyway, with that said, I'm sorry, Adam, you have a question. Go ahead.
I do have a question. So you mentioned, so you've got, because I didn't realize that, because I've never been to your, I'm a horrible friend and I haven't been to your Airbnb. Or
well, you better get over here.
I know. There was a party, there was a Christmas party and I didn't go because I had other friends and sorry.
I know, you had more important people to go see. I get it.
So So, no, but my question is when you, so let's say somebody wanted to do the whole live in your rental thing. Did you have to make alterations to your house to get it to do that? Or was it already kind of set up in that way where you just slapped a door or something on?
Well, yes and no. The layout was pretty sweet already before we even decided to do the guest rooms. And then once we decided, one of the things that Mark and I talked about is that we really, really, really like to have our own bathroom when we travel. We do not like to go down the hall to share a bathroom, especially if it's with other guests from another room, strangers that we don't know. So Mark was very handy and he was able to put a small ensuite bathroom inside each of our bedrooms, because we're in an 1865 house, which has pretty large bedrooms with really high ceilings. It's an older historic home. And so we were able to put little ensuite bathrooms. Now I lost all my closets because he kind of absorbed the closet, you know, and bathroom, and I lost the closet and part of the closet turned in part of the bathroom. But anyway, the point is that once he put a bathroom in each of, because the house has four bedrooms and we kept one for us, and the other three are for guests, and he put an ensuite bathroom in each of those three bedrooms. And then I said, oh, if I just could close this one doorway off, I would be happy, because, you know, I couldn't keep guests from coming out into our personal area. And so Mark hung one door. So he added three bathrooms and hung one door, and it works beautifully for us. Now, once I do the condo that's in Columbus, that one will be the whole house. So I can put that on visiting nurses. I could put that one on Airbnb. I could put it on Expedia. I could put that one even on VRBO, because it's the whole unit. It comes with the kitchen, the bedroom, the bathroom, the whole unit.
And you don't, because of your arrangement, you don't really get long. Do you get long-term guests? Like people that are there for like a month?
Not generally. Most of the time, and again, we're more utilitarian, kind of like yours. People are coming in, they're driving from from Chicago down to the Carolinas, and they want to stop over because they're just tired of driving, and so they'll spend the night just to stay over. And what happens is they start looking for a place. I get a lot of last minute because they start looking for a place as they're driving, and our rate is pretty good, and our all of our reviews are pretty good, and so folks are like, okay, let's just pick there because it's cheaper than some of the hotels, and their reviews look really good. And then I always try to over deliver. I always, in the mornings, I have a baker's rack in an entry parlor where everyone comes through, and I will have flavored coffees and teas and pastries and fresh fruit. And I'll have all of that for my guests every morning. Mm-hmm. And, but I live here. Cool. So it's so easy for me to do that. Yeah. And so that's how I can add value to their stay. So of course it'll look a little different when I do the condo, which is standalone, which is probably a good 20 minutes away from me, and then it'll be different when I do the property down in Hocking Hills, because that entire property will go, and my guess is there we'll get a lot of weekly rentals for folks that want to spend a week at Hocking Hills.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's kind of what I'm doing. But anyway, the first thing that I did is I did search out and find a channel manager so that I could connect all my channels through this channel manager. And I chose CloudBeds. And again, there's several different ones that you can choose. There's Little Hotelier and CloudBeds were the two that kept coming up for me. But I used CloudBeds between the two. They're almost identical. And it comes with a little front office. And here is the joy. I can go in on my front office software, and it looks, I used to work a hotel desk, and you know, at a Holiday Inn. It looks the same as what you would see in a hotel, because it shows all three of my rooms. It shows who's coming, who's checking out, their names, all of that. And if I go in and block a room, my channel manager pushes it out through all of the channels that I'm connected to, and it blocks it in real time. So if I did not want, let's say I wanted to block my rooms off Sunday night because we're not going to be home, or for whatever reason, I wanted to block the whole B&B. I didn't want any guests that night. I could just go in and just block it on my channel manager on my front office, and it would block it on Airbnb, Expedia, Travelocity, Hotels.com. It would block it on all those channels at in real time.
Cool.
So anyway, cost me $124 a month, and it comes with a website, a front office, and the channel manager all rolled into one piece of software.
Yeah. So I guess maybe even to piggyback on some of that, that's actually my next step, really, is to start branching out and getting more eyes on the property. So right now we are actually just on Airbnb. I think that, like you pointed out, it's a good, you know, dip your toe in the water and mm-hmm. kind of see if you like it, see if you don't like to do the short-term rental thing. Very easy to get set up, a great marketing tool. To market your short-term rental, but don't just limit yourself to that. And that's kind of our next step, is let's start looking at other opportunities and getting a channel manager, things like that.
So I do want to share this as well, because I know Adam, you're already working with an actual management company, and Joe, you want to have your own management company. And I will share, and this is kind of new for me, so I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it. Down in Hocking Hills, there is a management company. And one of the things that she does is she will actually put everyone's property on her channel manager. And then she can market all those properties. Where I might have three separate rooms on my channel manager, she might have 10 different properties. And she's got all, and she's renting the whole property. So it's the whole property is the unit. And she has about 10, and she'll put them on her channel manager. And then she signs up her channel manager with booking.com and Expedia and, you know, cabins.com and all these different channels. And her guarantee is that she can keep you pretty full, because, and then where you normally would pay a commission, you pay her a little bit higher commission. And not only does she keep you booked, but she also does your cleaning, and she does your maintenance, and she does your mowing, and she does your snow removal, and she delivers firewood to the units that have, you know, fire pits. And she does all of that, and it truly is passive income, and you can have a great cabin, and you don't even have to do the channel manager. She even does all of that.
What kind of rate does she charge?
She's charging 40%, but yeah. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, that's a lot. But when you think that you're paying 18% just out to your channels, if you're paying 18, which is the average, if you're paying 18% out to Booking and Expedia and Airbnb and all of those to get you a booking, she's going to get you a booking and do all the other stuff for 40. So all of a sudden it doesn't look that expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I mean, I would say my property manager has us on a few different platforms, Airbnb, VRBO. They have their own website, hospitality.io. Mm-hmm. And then he texted me the other day, and he put us on like Marriott or something. And it's great. Cool. More exposure. But I think that might be for medium term stays, because I just got a booking that was like from like the beginning of January through the middle of February, which is amazing, in Columbus, Ohio. So I'm thrilled with it. So whatever you did, I'm super happy.
Yeah. And so there's all kinds of possibilities there. So again, the answer is that you need to do your homework. Pauline wants to know, how else can one get a landlord to work with without actually buying the home? And I'll jump in and then I'll let Adam and Joe, answer that as well. But my first advice would be to definitely make sure that you find an area that is short-term friendly to begin with. You have to start there, because if you spend all your time convincing a landlord to let you rent their house, and then, you know, you pay a long-term lease so that you can turn around and short-term lease, and then find out that the zoning doesn't let you do it, now you're kind of stuck. So you have to start with zoning and make sure that the area that you want to do it in the municipality that you're in, the city that you're in, the county, the township, depending on where you are, make sure that you can do a short-term rental to begin with. And then once you can do a short-term rental, oftentimes they require the owner of the house to get the permit. And so then you would have to do a contract between you and the landlord. Now, quite frankly, I kind of like that as an owner, if somebody wanted to short-term rent one of my properties, because what I know is that they're going to handle a lot of the maintenance, and they're going to handle the cleaning, and they're going to handle a lot of stuff that I don't have to worry about. And so if you have a landlord that can appreciate that, but again, you have to start with an area where you know it's allowed first before you start really, I'll call it whining and dining that landlord. So anyway, Adam, what's your thoughts on that?
I was going to say, and the laws are always changing. Like, and the city or municipality generally is not great at communicating what the new rules are. So that's another vote for working with a property management company, because chances are, well, if they're good, they're going to know what all those laws are, and they're going to help you navigate that bureaucracy.
True, true. And oftentimes a management company might have some properties that they have that are available. So you might even, you know, connect with a management company first and see if they have something. Joe, what's your thoughts on that? Especially since you're getting ready to do management, what are your thoughts on working with a landlord and then the actual person's doing it as a short-term renter, not the actual owner of the house?
Yeah, I think I would agree with everything that both of you said. And then also keep in mind HOA as well, just kind of to piggyback on that same idea. I know that I'm currently talking to someone that has a condo that she wants to do kind of that short-term rental situation, but her HOA is saying no less than 30-day rental. So just knowing what you're buying or what you're potentially renting and what all those rules and regulations are is very important before you dive in too far.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that reminds me, I did buy a condo in Sarasota, and I'm in an HOA down there. And that is one of the rulings, is that I have to live there as an owner occupant. Now, again, it's a vacation property for me because I live here in Columbus, Ohio, but I'm the only one that lives there when I go down there. It's not rented to anyone else. It's a second home for me, and I have to use it as a second home owner occupied for 24 months. And then after, and this is right in the HOA, and then after 24 months, I am allowed to rent it out for a minimum of 30 days, and I can only do that twice the entire year. Now, the reason that I jumped on this condo and decided that it was a good buy for me to do that is the fact that it's in Sarasota, which is right in the heart of snowbird country. And so I know that once I've been there 24 months, if I rent it one time for, let's say, three or four months, my rental for that 3 or 4 months will pay the expenses for the entire year for that condo. And then I can use it the rest of the time. So that's my plan. And I'm coming up on my 2-year term. So I'm getting ready that, we can rent it out. And once I advertise it for a snowbird, and here's one of the pluses of snowbirds, is oftentimes once somebody stays for, let's say, 3 or 4 months, they make friends in that complex. They want the same unit every year. And so they just keep booking every year. You get the same person that comes every year, the same 3 months or the same 4 months or whatever, year after year after year after year, because they meet all their friends there, their other snowbird friends, and they become a community. So anyway, that's why that was a good buy for me. Adam,
Are you going to put a minimum stay, like 60 nights or 90 nights or anything like that?
For the one in Florida?
Yeah.
I haven't advertised it yet because I haven't made it to my 2-year mark yet, but I would like to try for a minimum of 90 days for 3 months. That's cool. would be my goal. And then if somebody wanted it for more, of course, if they wanted it 4 or 5 months, then I would go, oh yeah, twist my arm. But if, but I want to try to go at least 3 months, because again, Joe was talking a lot early on about making sure your numbers work, and the numbers work for me that if somebody pays for 3 months on a short-term rental, it pays my expenses for the whole year.
Sweet.
So
I love it.
I basically have a free condo if I, once I do that, but I had to get through the first 2 years for, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
I want to switch just a little bit, and I want to talk about when you first started, how did you furnish your Airbnb when you very first got started? Now for us, you guys are going to laugh. I told my mom when I was 12 years old that when I retired, I was going to run a bed and breakfast. And I didn't even know what a bed and breakfast was when I was 12 years old. I probably read it in a book or something. I don't know. So back along the way, we had a Holiday Inn in Lancaster, and they decided to tear it down. And again, that's another whole story. And so they decided to tear it down. And so they were auctioning off everything that was inside. And so Mark and I went down, and we bought, for pennies on the dollar, we bought like a brand new, because they had just furnished this one wing. We bought like brand new bed sets, and we bought like 8 of them. And Mark has airplanes. He's a pilot. And so he has a hangar, and in his hangar, he has a little loft area. And I bet, I'd have to ask him if he remembers, but I bet we stored those 8 bed sets for, I don't know if we stored them for 10 years, but I bet maybe 8 years. And, you know, and everybody was like, what are you going to do with those? And I'm like, well, someday I'm going to have a bed and breakfast. So when we finally then bought this house and decided to turn 3 rooms into guest rooms, I already had all the beds. All I had to do, we just went down and got them, because we had them all covered and, you know, tucked away. And so we just had to go down and get them and set everything up. And I went, you know, I went shopping, very frugal. I did all of my linens and towels from like Sam's Club and Costco and IKEA. All my drapes are from IKEA. And so we just, you know, went on a big shopping spree, and I just outfitted everything, and we opened. So, so how did you guys decide how you were going to decorate, and where did you get the furniture and the curtains and the linens and all of the stuff that goes into what you're doing? So Adam, I'm going to start with you. Where did you get all of that?
Oh man, mine's easy. I paid a guy to do it. So he's my property manager. He sent me, he's like, hey, this is what we usually put in these things. And he sent me a spreadsheet of all the stuff and the prices and the Amazon link. And he's like, do you like it? And I'm like, yeah. And it was the best. And then his guys went and put everything together. That's a killer management company when they do everything for you. Like that's because that's
Joe,
the whole point.
Joe, are you taking notes? Writing,
taking a few notes.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
So what about you, Joe?
Yeah. For us, you know, a lot of it, we were just figuring it out on our own a little bit. But we also were getting on talking to our real estate agent, going on to just different Facebook groups and sharing information and taking information and things like that. But really, I think we used a similar strategy as you, Kathy, where we've bought stuff at Costco, we've bought stuff on Amazon, out at IKEA, Facebook Marketplace. There's some local auction sites, things like that, that you can find things a lot cheaper, still good quality. You know, maybe we splurged on a few nicer light fixtures and nicer beds and things like that, that we thought would really add value. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways that you can still have it look nice, feel nice, have higher quality stuff, but not pay full price.
Good point. And I also discovered that I like to not spend high end on my linens, because I would rather replace the linens more often and have them look newer and fresher, because sometimes your linen is very clean, but it just starts to look tired. I'll use that word. It just starts to look tired. There's nothing wrong with it. It just starts to look tired. And when it starts to look tired is when your guests start to think it's not clean. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to spend more money up front and really make it nice, but then I really couldn't afford to replace it. And I finally opted to not spend as much and replace it more often. I found that that works better for me. So I don't know your thoughts on that, but that's what works for me. I want to describe a check-in for everyone. When I get a reservation, it comes through my channel manager, and my channel manager, of course, has notifications which pop up right into my my phone. And so no matter where I'm at, Mark and I can be out to dinner and I'll get a little notification that a booking has come through. And if it's for tonight, the same night that you know, we're out to dinner, I have the rooms ready to go. I can actually send out right from my phone, I can tap into my channel manager and send out a little welcome letter that says you have been electronically checked in. And here is the code to get through the front door. And here is your room assignment. And so I can do that while we're at dinner. So I can run the front desk anywhere that I can use my cell phone. And so that works very well for me, because I then, when I get home, because I live here, so that's kind of convenient for me, I can go ahead and put out all of the fruit and the pastries and everything the night before. I have all of my coffee pots on timers. I get all of that made and I go to bed. So now I don't even have to get up at a particular time in the morning, or if I have a meeting and I have to leave the house early or whatever, my guests are all taken care of in the entrance parlor. And there's a nice little, I'll call it a certificate, in their room. And I put, it's kind of my standard. And when I set up each room, I have it on the bed that says in the morning, there will be flavored coffees and pastries and fruit in the parlor, you know, for your enjoyment. And so they get that little notification in the room when they check in the night before, they know that that's going to be in the parlor the next morning. So that's kind of what it looks like for me. Each door then has a key in the door of the three individual doors to the three individual rooms. And there's a little note on the door that says, when you check out, just leave the key in the door. And that way, if they're there for two or three nights, they can lock their stuff in the room and take the key with them, just like a hotel room. And then the morning that they check out, they just leave the key in the door. And that lets me know that they've checked out if I see the door open with the key in the door. So what does it look like for you? Let's start with Adam. Adam, what does it look like for you?
I have no idea. I have a guy do it.
So ours is it's a keypad okay. check-in. So they get like some kind of courtesy email. And
that's so similar to mine.
Say what?
Now, again, since they're renting your whole unit, so they're getting a kitchen. Yeah. And all, so your amenities are already set out in the kitchen on whatever they're going to get. And
yeah.
So basically, it sounds like it's the same as mine. They get an electronic message that says, here's your code, you know, arrive at your convenience. You're all checked in. You're good to go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And people okay. love it. I mean, yeah, I read the reviews and the checks keep coming. So I'm
yep,
cool.
I get it.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of having a property manager, a good property manager that you as the
oh, yeah.
the owner just kind of doesn't have to worry about it. It's mm-hmm. very passive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. Very nice.
What's your check-in look like, Joe?
Yeah. What's yours look like?
Ours has a lot of similarities. You know, we send a checkout message a couple days before their stay. It has a lot of detail of, you know, here's when you can check in. Here's your check-in code. We have electronic locks on the front and back that we can actually control from our an app on our phone, which that is something that I would highly recommend investing in. It can be expensive upfront, but it's a one-time cost.
What brand are you using?
We're using Schlage, but I think August is also makes a pretty reputable brand as well.
Okay.
Yep.
I've seen both of those. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, I think it's really convenient to be able to do that. You can store multiple codes. If for some reason they're having issues remembering their code or unlocking the door, or maybe the lock jams or do all these different things, you can do it remotely just from your phone. So it's a really nice option. But in that welcome message, we do send check-in time. We send in their code. We give them a map of where they can park. And then, you know, at least during the winter right now, we've added to the message where, hey, here's where you can find some extra blankets, things like that, if okay. you need them.
I love it. I love it. Cool. Now, what kind of amenities do you put out? And again, mine is in the room itself. Each one of my rooms, because again, I have different guests in each room. I can have three different guests in three different rooms. So each room has its own little 4-cup coffee pot. I do have the little coffee pods of regular coffee and decaf coffee and some tea bags. And then I leave however many folks are registered in the room, I leave cookies. And they're the oatmeal cookies, and they're pre-packaged. So mm-hmm. I don't need to worry about, you know, people maybe handling the cookies and then leaving them. And, you know, so anyhow, they're all pre-packaged, and I leave enough cookies. If there's two people in the room or three people in the room, I leave enough cookies for everyone. And then I started with bottles of water, and, over the past few months, I did switch, because I'm trying to actually be a little more conscientious, you know, about all the plastic that we're throwing away. And so I did switch to glass carafes of water, and I haven't had any complaints on that. And then just recently I switched from the styrofoam coffee cups to actual glass mug coffee cups. And I haven't had any complaints on switching to those things. And it actually saves me a little bit of money, because I'm not buying the cups or the bottled water. And then of course having to throw all of that away, and they leave it sit all over the place. But I do just bring it all down and run it through my dishwasher, and so it works really well that way. So anyway, and then I have the parlor where in the morning and that's where I leave a basket of fruit and some more pastries and flavored coffees, and then I have the glass mugs there as well. So what does your amenities look like for you guys?
Ours has a lot of similarities. We have a coffee machine for K-Cups, as well as ground coffee, and we provide a certain amount of that for our guests. We also have a basket of snacks, and you know, just trying to be cost effective, and you know, we'll go to Costco or something like that, buy in bulk, have a nice variety. In the bathroom, we try to have a few things that maybe people could potentially forget. And so like maybe some mini toothbrushes and toothpaste and makeup wipe off, you know, like where you can remove your makeup. So that's actually one thing that I would probably recommend too, is that, you know, I don't wear makeup, but my wife thought of the good idea of doing that, where it's we aren't having to turn over our bedding as much, because a lot of the guests that do wear makeup are taking advantage of that, using the makeup wipes. We also have some kind of like black makeup removal towels as well.
Yes.
So that's another way to just kind of provide those amenities. It looks nice. It's nicely rolled and presented. But then also you also get that advantage of hopefully they're using them, and then you're not having to replace as much of your linens.
Yes, I agree. In my showers, I also supply the shampoo, the conditioner, and the body wash. I supply that in the shower as well. So yes. Okay. It sounds like it's very similar. Adam, how about you? Do you know offhand?
Coffee. I know we do coffee, and it's, you know, it's a whole house. So there's, you know, refrigerator water, which is like the best water in the world. way better than sink or bathroom water. Right, which is gross. Right. But yeah, that refrigerator water, and then I think toiletries. There's some toiletries, like shampoo and conditioner and stuff like that, that's made available.
And of course, both of you have kitchens, so you have to have the cookware and everything there as well.
Well, yeah, that okay. So there is literally like everything that you would need to like cook. But there's not like a dozen eggs in the fridge or anything like that. If you want to like cook a whole meal, you go to the grocery store and get all the stuff and then go and cook a whole meal there. Like, and it's actually kind of funny, because like one of the first bills that I got that I questioned was for frying pans. And I'm like, why did I get charged for frying pans? They're like, because somebody stole them. Which,
that's too bad.
I mean, it is what it is, but like, yeah. I never would have guessed that somebody would have stolen frying pans, but they're a hot commodity.
They must have really enjoyed the frying pan, you know?
Yeah.
I get that. Now let's talk about cleaning. I do all my own. So far that's, you know, that's the way it is. I do have a gal that comes in once a month. And she does a deep cleaning for me once a month, you know, like she'll do baseboards and ceiling fans and all the inside of all the windows and all the blinds and all the stuff that I don't do between each guest. And she does it once a month. And then the rest of the time I'm flipping the beds, running the sweeper, dusting, you know, refreshing all the everything. And I can flip a room in about a half an hour. So if I have a full house, I, you know, within a couple of hours, I can have everything flipped and ready to go again. So how do you got now? I know, Adam, I know your management company does your cleaning and they clean the whole unit for you. And that's all included in your management fee.
It is. Now they can't, I believe they still, they're contracting with a separate cleaning company.
Okay.
So, and as far as I understand it, the clean, whatever the cleaning fee is, that just, it's just a pass-through expense. So it goes into their account and then goes out to the cleaners.
Okay. Now, Joe, how about you, especially with you getting ready to start doing some management, are you planning on hiring employees to do the cleaning or are you just going to subcontract a whole separate cleaning company?
So just kind of in our Airbnb journey and us self-managing, we interviewed a handful of cleaners before we were able to find a really good fit with the level of quality that we wanted. And so we currently actually have a really good cleaner and she has a small team of people that can actually just knock out an Airbnb or a whole house within a pretty reasonable amount of time. She's looking to scale and increase her cleaning business. So hopefully that'll coincide with the properties that I start managing and her business is growing and we can kind of grow together.
Okay. Okay. That's a great plan. So who handles guest complaints? The buck stops with me on mine because I'm self-managing. How do you handle guest complaints?
I mean, we fortunately haven't had too many complaints. I would say that one way that I think what's working is being very upfront in the listing, just, you know, on Airbnb. Here's what we provide. Here's maybe, you know, we live in a little bit noisier neighborhood or busier streets. So just putting that in the listing up front and letting people that could potentially book your place know that up front so that that just helps reduce potential complaints later on. But we fortunately haven't really had too many complaints. A lot of times my wife and I just put our heads together and kind of respond or do what we can to resolve any issues.
Have you had any reviews that you just have to kind of wonder what in the world the guest was thinking? I think everyone that's had an Airbnb at some point has had a review that you had. Where did that come from?
I think one person, I think the just kind of on that related to that noise comment that I made, one guest did say something about like, hey, this sounds like the Indy 500 or something like that. But I, you know, and there's not much you can do, but we started adding like noise machines and things like that, that it's like, if you're maybe a little bit lighter sleeper, you have options that, that can potentially, help kind of mitigate that. But yeah, I think just being upfront in your listing and communicating with your guests, listening to your guests, and is probably the best way to handle a lot of those.
Adam, how about you?
Management company, man. I, you know, it's so funny because like short-term rental, running a short-term rental can be the most active work. I mean, it can be another job. It is another job, in my opinion. Like to run one of these things is definitely a part-time job because it takes time to a certain extent, especially if you're doing your own cleaning. But it can also be 100% passive if you use a property manager. So I'm very excited to see what Joe does with his property management company and how that develops because, you know, I mean, I love Ben, but I'm not married to Ben. So, you know, we're just dating.
I like it.
Anyway, I love that. Now I want to add one last thing and then I want everyone to put your contact information in the chat so that folks can reach Adam. I want you to put all your stuff in there and Joe, I want you to put your stuff in there and I'll put mine in there. And the last thing that I want to mention is that when you get reviews always answer your reviews for your future guests, not for the guests that reviewed you. And let me say that again. If you're going to answer your own reviews, answer your reviews for your future guests, not for the guests that reviewed you. Because the guests that reviewed you already has had their experience. They already stated what they thought it was. For example, somebody said, well, I really loved the house, but it was not, it was in a bad location. Well, what does bad location mean for that person? We're in a downtown historic area of a little city that has a walking scale, a walkability scale of 10. And we've got cafes and wineries and microbreweries and little shops, and everything's out on the sidewalk and it's beautiful and everybody loves it and everybody's out walking. But what they meant was, is they had to drive too far to get back to the freeway to get to where they were going. So they, but instead of saying it was too far off of the freeway for where they were heading, they said, we loved it, except it was in a bad location. So I had the opportunity to respond to that comment by, again, reaffirming that we were in a historic downtown and that we were very walkable. And so all of a sudden, I took what could have been a bad review and I turned it into a little marketing piece. And so then I made a comment like, I certainly you know, and again, you always want to agree with your guest. And so I agreed that I certainly can understand, you know, if you thought that it was going to be a little closer to the freeway, you know, we are 8 miles from the outer belt. And so again, if somebody's traveling through to go 8 miles to get to their room and then 8 miles back in the morning, especially if they have to get to Port Columbus to catch a flight or whatever, they may have thought, boy, we could have done away with that 16 miles and picked someplace closer. And I get that. But it was an opportunity for me to turn that into a marketing piece instead of saying, what do you mean it's a bad neighborhood? We're not in a bad neighborhood, because that's not what they meant. So anyway, I just want to mention that for those of you that have Airbnbs or short-term rentals, that you can change any review into a marketing piece. Always write for your future guest, not for the guest that was there. Okay. Put in the chat. I'm going to look at the Q&A, because I haven't been following that. There's nothing in the Q&A, so we're good there. And so in the chat, folks can reach me at kathybinner.com, and you can scroll down. That's my website. So you can find the replays of all of our calls, all of the folks that we've interviewed on the ins and outs. You can find all of that in the kathybinner.com. Just scroll down to the free section of the ins and outs of opening an Airbnb, guest house, VRBO, short-term rental. And you'll find all of our replays there. You'll find ways that you can connect with me there if you want to talk with me further. I want to connect with Todd and Lynn so far. And I did have one other comment here. Pauline wants to know, is there anyone in the Boston area she would like a partner to go in with on this? In the Boston area. I don't know of anyone offhand in the Boston area, but I will keep my eyes and ears open, because Mark was born in Boston. So anyway, I'll go through and see if I have some there that I can pass on. So Travis put his information there. Thank you so much, Travis. I'll get in touch with you. Joe put all of his information in there. And did you put yours in earlier?
Yeah, mine should be in there.
Adam put his in there. So now I'm going to give you a little hint for everybody that's still listening. If you open up the chat and you look at the bottom where it says you're going to maybe send a chat out to everyone, go to the three little dots over on the right-hand side. If you click on the dots, the very top thing says save chat. So you don't have to write all that down. It'll save it right into the device that you're on. And if you didn't get to save it and you didn't get to write it down, maybe you're driving and listening while you're in the car or whatever, just go to kathybinner.com, scroll down to all the free stuff. I'll upload all of the contact information there as well. So that way everyone will be able to get to it. Because I know a couple of folks wanted to connect with Adam about refinancing. So any last comments before we go? This has been a great conversation. Gosh, we ran over a little bit. Any last comments? I just say, I'm excited if you guys are going to do this thing. It's amazing. My best advice, I'll give one last tip, best advice, is choose a property that you can use for short-term rental. But if for some reason you decide you don't want to do it or it doesn't work out, you can use it for long-term rental. And that way it's a win-win. So that's my biggest advice. What's your last tip, Adam?
No, you said it right. You said it perfectly. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, we could have another February 2020. And if, you know, I think half of mine was luck. The other half was having an experienced property manager that knew how to navigate those waters. So, but yeah, make sure that you have multiple exit strategies if it's not going to work.
Or if you just decide you don't want to do it anymore, because if you're doing your own management, it like Adam said, it can be at least a part-time job to just go flip rooms and clean and whatever. And, mm-hmm. and oftentimes it's a weekend job because that's when the people want to come and go is on the weekends. And so, you know, you do have to love it. And if you decide you don't love it, you do have to have an exit strategy. So, and property management is your first exit strategy if you just want the passive income. And so, Joe, what's your advice? What is your best tip?
I think take action. Like, you know, it's great to attend these monthly meetups and you learn a lot of information and get to meet a lot of great people, but also take action. And
I love that. Yes, definitely take action. Gosh, Joe, thank you so much for being on with us. I really appreciate you sharing. And hopefully we'll get some folks come in your direction when they're ready to have something going on in your area so that you can add them to your property management. And Adam, thank you always for being my co-mod, co-host, and always showing up for me. And thank you so much for that. And I will see you guys out and around town.
See you guys. Thanks.
All right. Thank you guys for coming and thank everyone, all of you that are attending. Thank you so much. And please come back again next month. Bye-bye.
Bye.